And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
Was that fun on Sunday?
Didn't feel much fun. God, no. And I was sitting next to a really good friend whose company I always enjoy in the football. And there were some really interesting people around us. But yeah, look, I was actually thinking during the third quarter, there is nothing more tense in the game in AFL football. And there's no bigger, everyone in the ground can, in the third quarter when people can feel the momentum shift. And, you know, being a stats nerd, I don't necessarily believe in momentum rationally. But when you're in the ground and you're sitting amongst, doesn't matter if you're on the winning side or the losing side, everyone can feel what's happening. And I swear, Nick, I was thinking, now, I wasn't a big Richmond area, but I swear sort of halfway through the game, I would have said that the crowd was 60-70% Richmond, and then they start coming back and they're so noisy, and yeah, it feels like an away game. But yeah, it was like, I mean,
it wasn't an away game, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It felt like what it was, rather than for a while it felt like a home game. And you know, sort of forget a, you know, even forgetting about the broader significance, it was, you know, that's a really depressing way to lose a game, like just on any given Sunday to lose a game like that. But yeah, the dying of the light of the dynasty.
Well, and that whole kicking the opposition kicks 10 goals in a row thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's bad.
That's really going to be a pleasurable experience, right?
Hashtag yeah, analysis.
Yes, but the sort of the what it means and the similarities to the Carlton game. There was definitely definitely on Sunday night. I was having one of those. My God, football affects my mood so much. Kind of moments.
I know, and like the depths. I mean, for me at least, the depths aren't as bad because you know there's that pillowy blanket of achievement that we can fall back on. But yeah, you still ride the roller coaster every week, and oh. Yeah, as you said, this and the Carlton game, not all that much fun. I mean, there are individual moments in the game that are still
totally
an awful lot of fun.
Good.
Particularly anything involving Shea Bolton, seemingly. But yeah, that thing where the opposition midfield gets on top and we can barely get our hand on the football for long periods of time, that's not much fun.
Now we'll go to the individual player analysis in a tick as we always do, Nick. But can I ask you a sort of what is worse as a fan to watch is the player that you had a few hopes and dreams of who's on 25 games when you realise that he's not up to it, or watching a player that you adore who's won 3 premierships who looks like the light is fading for one reason or another, whether they can't be fit or whether they don't have the speed for the game, which...
Definitely the latter, unless...
It's a really profound thing, isn't it? Because, you know, with the bright young thing, there's always another bright young thing. That's terrible. I know they're human beings, but as fans, you know, let's say in like our current draft class, we've got 4 guys inside the top 30. If, you know, one of them isn't up to it...
Five.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm so silly. But, you know, we can focus on the upside. But yeah, when you're sort of seeing these really special instrumental players to your team who've given you so much happiness to just when you notice they can't quite get it done anymore or that their game has to change because of their fading speed. Yeah, it's an experience we really haven't had that much. And yeah, it's unique and it is powerful.
I mean, we've had, you know, Basher Hawley struggled to get it and Sean Grigg struggled to get on the park. But they still very much looked like themselves. Dave Asprey gave us no notice, and either with his play or with his stated intentions. So he was sort of gone before we knew to miss him. But yeah, if you're talking about Shane Edwards, he has definitely lost a step. He's still capable of moments of magic, but yeah, there's definitely fewer moments. I mean, to complete your point, I mean, it's always sad the you know, when a player's career doesn't live up to expectations. But yeah, the fading of the light is definitely difficult.
Yeah, I want to talk about Shedder in a second, but you did correctly guess who was front of mind, and he's not the only one. But I had a moment, as you know, Nick. I was public speaking in front of quite a few people on Saturday, and someone said to me, "Oh, don't be." Like, it was only a minor role, but I was, you know, pronouncing a few slightly tricky names, and someone joked to me, "Oh, you know, don't be nervous, but you know, potentially X million people are watching on the internet, whatever, you know." My role wasn't that important, but they were sort of joking to me, oh, surely you must be nervous. And you know, Nick, the saddest thing I thought about was, my God, I get more nervous before a football game. Like, what is wrong? What is wrong with my priorities in life?
Well, I don't see anything. Actually, when you told me that, I was like, oh yeah, I have a certain degree of detached curiosity of, you know, meeting famous people outside of the football context.
But like football, it's like you have no control in football. It's just the you're emotionally throwing yourselves over to these largely strangers. Anyway, we're getting far too. Philosophical, because we might upset the Bulldogs next week, and next week podcast will be pew pew pew. You know, the dynasty's back on. Let's go for four, baby.
I think we're smart enough not to pronounce judgment on the dynasty every week. Like, I think we've earned the right to, as cliche says, take it week by week and enjoy the moment for it is. I'm feeling cautiously positive about the Bulldogs, weirdly enough.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's Wednesday too, where we're recording this on, so that's quite late in the week for you to be positive.
Well, I've already been through the down cycle, but the reasonably positive injury news is sort of has helped. So, but we should get
to that. Yeah. Mm. So look, we were leading in the fourth quarter.
We were leading at three quarter time,
and you know,
leading. I think it was. Were we 20 or 26 points? I've got it in my notes. No, 25 points up when Dylan Grimes hobbles off the ground. So it could be all Jake Hart's fault.
Look, you know, I'm all up for blaming Dim as mediocre role players, as you well know. But there is a broader point here, which I know is really hard. Like, I don't accept it intellectually, but I think it needs to be said, is sometimes you need to look at the game forgetting about the sequence in which goals were kicked and look at it as a totality. And, you know, like, we did lose. They beat us on all the key game metrics, but it wasn't a thrashing.
Not,
it was just...
Not inside 50s, which is the key game metric. Well,
oh, yeah, that is true.
Actually is best, but... inside 50s,
second. And sort of we on the expected score on the one I use, you use a different one. It was about a 3-4 goal loss. So yeah, look. So it is, you know, just at least because the game was crashingly disappointing. So yes, we did lose with a lot of similarities to the Carlton game, but it is important to remember that it wasn't a 100-point loss. Well, no, I know, laughing, but you know the you know there are statistical precedents that if you lose a game by a certain amount, you're never going to win the flag. This was not that game, even though it might have felt like it at times.
That's true. And look, they're not a particularly good team. They certainly haven't been. Look, they had Dougal Howard and Paddy Ryder back this week, who are both reasonably important players. Yeah, look, honestly, I didn't come away overwhelmingly impressed by them as a team. They sort of were as advertised, with, you know, Max King is sort of capable of a game-changing quarter, but not four quarters at the stage, thankfully. But yeah, they're a team with a lot of industry. But yeah, I also came away thinking a fully fit and firing Richmond can win that game fairly easily. I mean, in the very broadest sense, you know, roughly speaking, to put it crudely, if you look at teams' injury list, it gives you a pretty good indication of how they're travelling. Like, the teams with the biggest injury lists, West Coast, Essendon, Richmond and Port Adelaide, certainly in terms of the value of the players off the park, and probably...
And by value, you actually mean literal value, isn't it? How much they're paid.
Yeah, well, look, both how much they're paid and their value to the team, and to an extent, the sheer number of players for West Coast. But, you know, for us, roughly speaking, we had, when Grimes limped off, we had about $4 million worth of players in the off the field out of a $13 million salary cap. So that's a lot. Like, it is far more than what teams can normally cover for any sustained period of time. And yep, we've got our two best inside midfielders not in the team, and you know, the guys replacing them are a mix of the young and the old and our best small forward. So yeah, it's a tough situation.
It is. So, look, I think, like, part of this, it feels like a donut team, and the donut team, the thing in the centre that's missing is a couple of elite mids, which, you know,
And I think we really missed Grimes, and we missed Vossie all day, and we missed Grimes particularly as well, because I felt, I mean, part of it was Marvel Stadium, which does always play... you know, it's a smaller ground, and you're more likely to get a shootout. But yeah, I felt our defence wasn't as well organised.
No, I mean, defence was frankly a disaster for how much that they allowed, and the first quarter was crazy. Like, it was crazy entertaining football. But yeah, it was.
Yeah, the coaches would have hated it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's it's one of the rare times where it actually looked like the AFL's rule changes were working before the normality reasserted itself. Look, a few things we could go on forever. I just wanted to note, you know. That, to me, is the best game I've seen Broad play in a Richmond jumper.
Mm. He's averaging 5 disposals a game more than he did last year. Like, it is for you know, he's 28 years old, turning 29 soon. Like, it is rare and to be appreciated for someone who had such a late start to senior AFL. Football as well. Yeah, it's a credit to him to be playing as well as he is. Jaden Short has kicked the ball 14 times more than any other player in the AFL.
Seems like a lot. Probably not a good thing.
Doesn't feel like a good thing.
Perhaps over, we're becoming a bit over. Like, it is one thing, and I'm sure you noticed on the TV as well, but on the ground, it was just so obvious. Like, from halfway through the third quarter, we had no run, we had no second, we had no creative options. It just felt like this ball's going down the line. And actually, a few times, it just, like, we're really relying. Like, I can totally see why we've really committed to the Noah Bolter forward act, because we were banging it long, like Tom Hafey. Tom Hafey was up in heaven, nodding down and smiling at our game plan, because there wasn't too much. I mean, the players would look and bored, but they'd not go there. So yeah, it was it became very static football, and perhaps the reliance on the one long kicker out of the back line. Now, I've heard some question his defensive game, and I haven't sort of triple checked it to see, but you know, Rioli on the offensive side was actually very well rated and had the
same
20 touch game that you'd want.
Yeah, look, and I checked his numbers as well. They're actually they're pretty consistent since he got moved to defence at about 18, 19 disposals a game. But he was involved in the action a lot, which is a good thing. Like he wasn't perfect in his defensive work, but he had really high work rate defensively.
Well, to your point,
and,
Nick,
and like, did a lot of good things, I thought. Yeah.
To compare that, so pressure points are very much situational specific. So you can't, they're not a generic metric. You sort of got to see them in context. But Rioli had midfielder pressure points.
From a position that rarely generates them.
Like he had almost three times as, he had basically 2.5 times more than Short does. And he had more than twice as many as Broad does. So like they're all full-time backmen. So exactly what you're saying is that, yeah, that's a very high number, and it backs up that your meta point about him being very involved. You can only do that if you're very involved in the action.
Mm. Yeah, I think Rioli down back's going pretty well. You mentioned Noah Bolter, and I did. He looked great in the for moments in the first half. You did notice his sort of lack of forward craft in knowing where and when to present, though, I thought.
Yeah, I must admit, I was sort of. There was a few times in the second where I was really applauding his second efforts when we got really static that he was making an effort to provide a contest, but he had five touches.
Effort, I don't think was the problem. It was
but
positioning.
To back up your point, he had five touches for the game and one in the second half.
Yeah,
and meanwhile, Bugger Lugs is destroying us at the other end, and we're giving up the best matchup on him in the hope that Noah will play well forward. And, and to his credit, Dimmer's gambling in an attacking way, but yeah, Noah's not making the gamble work, or didn't make it work on the weekend.
No, but with Jack out of the team, you can certainly see why he made the decision. There's a few, you look at the disposal stats for the last quarter. Graham had two disposals in the last quarter. Pickett had two disposals in the last quarter. Ross had one disposal. Like, all the guys who were sort of doing all the work to get us in front, like, there was, it was a whole team problem of not getting hands to the ball. But, yeah, the last quarter was bad.
Look, I want to run this theory past you because I watched the game live and you watched it on TV, but actually, Thompson Dow did run out. It was part of that group who ran out of steam, which is not unexpected for a guy of Thompson's age. He's still fairly callow.
Three disposals in the last quarter.
Yeah, so to make 23 for the match. But I put it to you. I'm flying a kite with you, Nick. That actually he was crucial. Although he is not a brilliant inside player, he's now the best centre clearance player we have on the team with Prestia and Dusty out.
Mm.
And when he ran out of steam, it was actually crucial because
Other than Shea Bolton. I don't think you can have Shea Bolton in there that much, but...
He's a different kind, I guess.
True. Shea just cuts... He cuts the game apart, like tears it apart when he gets the ball in the middle.
He's sort of the receiver, like as the first receiver inside mid. Dow's now our best one, and he's not perfect as a player, but I thought his grunt work was really important to sort of hold the center square. And the first half was actually pretty good, and I think Dow has actually become an instrumental player.
Yeah, I was impressed. I've always liked him, but thought he had a way to go as a senior footballer. But yeah, no, he's taken a pretty substantial step forward. There's still work to be done, particularly with his kicking and just tightening up his disposal and judgment under pressure. But I think I think it's trending pretty well.
The one that he's super strong through the leg. He's got that natural, you know, inside mid, so I just have to sometimes kick the ball around the corner when there's no other options. And he just doesn't often quite flush that kick.
No.
And I don't know if that's a habit can be learned or we'll just have to accept it, but he probably does 3 or 4 a game, and it would just be helpful if they're a little bit straighter, a little bit longer, because you get that no-look flush kick, you get that in the inside 50 from the center square, it's a good kick.
Oh, yeah, with the 6-6-6 rule, yeah,
but and just sometimes it lands outside, you know, it goes to the flanks, and like it's better than losing the clearance, but but it's just, you know, to fully take advantage of his skills, it just be. I don't know if this is a fixable problem, but it would be great if he could.
Yeah, we broke even on the center clearances. Much. It was the stoppage clearances around the ground that was the problem.
And also, it was when they got a, we couldn't stop them when they had a roll on. Like the aggregate figures with Carlton weren't that bad. It was the we couldn't stop them when they got going, and yeah. So I don't know what happened with Carlton because Dow wasn't playing. But well, there are other theories for Carlton. But it just feels like Dow tiring as a young player would. I thought that was quite important in the game. Nick, I want to. This hurts me to admit this.
It was a bad day for Nankto.
No, that's far, far worse. I actually think George played quite well.
Oh, yeah. He was fine.
He actually led the team in pressure acts.
Yeah. Which, 15 disposals. Nice goal.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's the first time he's ever done that. So, yeah. He's not the liability that I paint him as.
Speaking of people doing their job, I thought Lynch toiled away manfully, without getting a ton of support, unfortunately.
Yeah, he did get 3 shots on goal. Unfortunately, 1-2. But yeah, I agree with that. Pickett was good in the first half. His fade out hurt us. I hope that
I thought first three quarters actually. He was tracking back really well as he's done all season. Like for a guy who wasn't in the seniors for the 2 practice games, he'd be a long way from being dropped, I would have thought.
If we keep losing, I'm going to start getting bolshy about playing Arts and Parker all the time, but Pickett can stay for the rest of the year.
No, Parker's good. I mean,
look, he's fine, but
he's a week by week proposition. But he kicked 3 goals. Like it's
he's on the max of his performance curve. I do recognize the 3 goals, and it was an actual absolute orgy of goals kicked by people who used to be on the other team.
Oh yeah. Oh, I didn't enjoy Higgins kicking a goal and celebrating. But I hated seeing him get concussed as well.
That was crap. Yeah, and it was on the strangest play. That kick was definitely. So seeing that live, the kick arc away in the opposite direction you expect it to go to. It is what.
Did you miss Dan Butler watching him play for St Kilda?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So might we just talk about Shedder a bit, and this is actually something I've noticed George is doing as well. But George has sort of, he's still young enough; he can change his game. Is that one of the reasons the AFL ratings loved Shedder, and they always have much remarked on this podcast, is it really biases towards people who move forward with the football and then move the football themselves forward. So like they, with their body, they move it forward, they gain ground, and then they hand pass or kick into a dangerous spot. AFL ratings love that. And that's why they've always loved Shedder. And I just noticed Shedder was, a lot of times Shedder just didn't trust his legs to go forward. He'd go back, he'd go sideways, and hence he was in the bottom third. for AFL ratings, where, you know, Scherder in his prime, you know, he'd have what you think a mediocre game, but he'd be in the top third for AFL ratings. Or he sometimes is our best, and you sort of wouldn't have thought him that on the basic stats, but just he was always moving to dangerous positions, and he's lost some of that knack. And I worry. George is evolving to his credit, but he's lost. He doesn't go anymore either. He doesn't trust his Jets very much anymore. I've sort of been noticing that the last few weeks. And
oh, really? Because he still shows up in the running stats, both in distance and speed.
Yeah, but I think and that's right. He's an endurance runner, but he can't burn off, like, you know, if he's taking a mark on the wing, running with the ball, he can't straighten and burn off his opponent anymore. Like, the only player we've really got who can do that anymore is Rouse Smith, who's got the young person's jets. So I don't know if Butler still has those jets, I'd want him back. But if he's like everyone else on our team who used to be burning quick and is now just sort of semi-quick, and has to go back and kick over the mark, well, you know, we've got quite a few of that type already. So I don't know. I'd have to watch a few more games of him. Like, I always loved Dan Butler. I loved the way he could do that. He could straighten the game with genuine speed. But that kind of game is a young man's game. So sort of, you know, investing a lot in small forwards who've lost their one wood of blazing speed. Yeah. So I can see that was a long answer to say I'm not sure.
Hmm. Yeah, and it is. I don't know. Yeah, we've always looping the conversation back to Jaden Short, who's a free agent and sort of our only major free agent. We have always put our money where the most valuable positions are, which I think is absolutely the right thing to do. You know, all the
Well, the counterfactual is pretty miserable.
Well, yeah. I mean, look what Carlton's experience when your big off-season recruits are third forwards or halfback flankers. Like, it just doesn't work. And I think, you know, we are already the odd trade rumours bubbling up. You know. Channel 7 had us as one of three teams linked to Darren McStay, which, I don't know, just feels, you know, we prioritise the most valuable position on the ground, and that doesn't feel like that.
No, I think the key thing from my long analysis was bring on Judson Clark.
Oh no, God! I still think he's a little way away. You want to talk about the rucks?
Yeah, it's not working. Like, it worked really well last week, but it's just the problem. It's the problem we've talked about before. Is they're both first rucks. And if things aren't going your way, and look, I think it worked really well in 2019 when we had a gun midfield and we had a lot of guys in their prime who could run a ton and who could win the contested ball. And so what having two rucks does is it gives you just that little edge around the contest, around the contested ball, which is, you know, something we've never been elite at. But, you know, if you sort of... If the fundamentals are in place, it can give you that winning edge against good teams. The problem is the fundamentals aren't in place with our midfield, and right now it's all hands to the pump, and we could have desperately used another runner and sorry, Dimmer, but bringing on Jake Hartz and playing him in the centre square, like, you sort of... That's not stopping any flow. Like, you need someone with tricks, you need an extra runner, and, yeah, the sort of... bash and crash to Ruckman isn't working. And look, I love, like, Nank was actually had a highly rated game and had that awesome highlight and kicked a great goal.
And so if you look, Nank and Soldo had one more, slightly fewer disposals. Oh, sorry. One more disposal, slightly fewer hit outs, and one less goal than Rowan Marshall and Ryder combined. So,
what's the difference? The difference is the environment that they're in.
Yeah. So does that mean it's not? So that means it's not the Ruckman's fault.
I don't know. Oh God, I don't look. I think they're both fine, perfectly fine first rucks, but
need. We've got to keep working on the structure.
And you know, one of the things I love about Bolter as a forward is that he's a brilliant second ruck, and we're not using that. When we're playing two full-time rucks.
I wouldn't go as far as
brilliant, but he's kind of a spark plug. Like he's not actually a great ruckman at all, but like he'll do the odd thing that leads to a goal.
Yeah, but you'd be uncomfortable. I'd be uncomfortable rucking him
against Ryder.
Yeah, against Ryder or Marshall or you know against the teams that do have two
genuine. Yeah, we definitely don't want him getting corky. So, yeah, that is fair too. Look, we got three games evidence that's far. I think the first game, it wasn't great, but I didn't have strong feelings. The second game, it looked magnificent. Third game, not so good. You know, I suspect they'll go back to it one more time.
It's a very interesting test this week. The Bulldogs have experimented with having two rucks, but on the weekend, Tim English was the only one who had Sydney only play one ruck, so they only had one, and English was very good, but
yeah, he was the story of the game basically.
Yeah, but do you? Yeah, I don't know. If I was a Bulldogs supporter, would I be comfortable with English going against Nankin Solbo all day? Or Aaron Norton pinch eating in the ruck? I would love Aaron, as a Richmond supporter, I would love Aaron Norton to pinch it in the ruck against Solbo. That would be great.
Yeah, as a Solbo fan, absolutely. Yeah.
And as a fan of brutality,
indeed. And it would be nice if Dimmer played. I think this is good. Is there anyone else you want to talk about the seniors? Because I think it's almost. I want to talk about the VFL.
Look, I think we mentioned that he faded out, but Jack Graham is steadily working his way into the season, and as you'd expect. I thought he was pretty good.
10 contested possessions, which is not bad by his standards. All right, VFL, Nick, which was definitely the highlight of the weekend for me.
Yes, well, not the team as a whole.
No, but yeah, with VFL, it's always more exciting. Like the wins are good in the finals, but in the regular season, what you really care about is the bright young things looking good.
Yeah. And particularly, you mentioned Judson Clark. He was quite good. He does look like a child.
And crap zone for him. Like if you didn't see the highlights, it was very wet.
Yeah, it was. It looked like a real VFL, old style VFL football.
I love the fact it was so rainy in the rain belt of Melbourne. Like it was very much.
I just had these flashbacks. We're bearing the lead. Tyler Sonsi, 34 disposals, 7 tackles, 10 clearances, and yeah, he was and for a fair bit of the day he was very clean in terrible conditions, including having a very nice goal for the second week in a row.
So, Nick, I watched the game live, and I was actually at the gym for the start of it, but fortunately it was on the gym TV, and I had to interrupt my curls in the squat wrap because like just every time you looked at the screen, there was number 29. It was almost compulsive viewing. He was in every play. And when he kicked that lovely goal, I was like, whoop! very loud in the gym. It was just, but it was genuinely compelling the way he just looked. Now I know he was probably ball hunting. He tackled well, and there's great tackles in his highlights. But it just felt like he was the most important player on the ground.
I think you'd make a great sub.
Exactly. Well, so and that's why I wanted to transition is bring on we love Dimmer, as we've said last week. He's probably the best coach we'll ever had. But bringing on Arts as a sub and playing him in the center square is the worst things about Dimmer is let's play the earnest role player who reminds me of myself and tries really hard and will play the team structure. And that's all great, but he's not going to. And he almost took the mark of the year, to full credit. That was amazing. That was in front of me. He got such hops. Good for Arts. And look, he's a very admirable footballer. I really admire him. But sometimes you just got to play the kids with tricks. And Sonsi's got tricks, and he might have got us. It was too early. I wouldn't have played him either, but it's time. He'd be a great sub. He comes on.
He has played. Yeah. You wouldn't pick him on his previous week's game, although it was
pretty good. Yeah.
It was pretty good, but it wasn't. And for he didn't have a full preseason either. So, you know, he doesn't have a huge base of running, but God, it's just a lot of talent.
Yeah, but it's sort of a bit like the Stack thing. He got 34 touches against a very competent VFL team.
Mm, yeah.
He might not be super fit, but he seems fit enough to make a contribution, and a contribution when the whips are cracking.
As a sub, he's extremely unlikely to have to play out four quarters. Yeah.
Yeah, we were thinking exactly the same thing.
Agreement.
Okay, who else?
I think Riley Collier-Dawkins suffers a bit from not being as flashy as Sonsi, but he's working really hard, which I like. I'm still a believer, even though, you know, he's had a few setbacks from what had been a really good preseason. Ryan Mansell is not putting a foot wrong either.
I agree. I just don't think he's got a spot right now. But I do.
No, I don't. But I think if needed, he'd be there. You would rely on him to do his job.
Okay, Nick. I'm going to surprise you now and talk about Samson Ryan breaking a habit. And look, I'm not going to lie, I was worried about how the big muscular VFL Box Hill ruck sort of
Sandringham.
Sandringham, sorry. I don't know why I said Box Hill twice, didn't I? Similar uniform. That he threw him out of the way and caught the ball out of the boundary throwing, which is basically like the most humiliating thing that can happen to you as a ruck. But someone made the point to me who knows far more about AFL football than I will ever know, and who does know the Richmond VFL team, that he was still very high on him. He thought the experiences of Ford will do him well because you can pick up lazy habits in the ruck, and just thinks when he really works out his core strength that he'll... he had a lot of hope that he's got the natural talent, and he just needs to work on that core, but it'll come. So I found that quite, because the core is not there. But
no, the core is not there. And look, he was rucking against a long time AFL ruck in Tom Campbell, and Campbell's stats are only slightly better. So he's had a productive day, but The question is, you know, can he develop physically to be able to use those skills?
Yeah, look, if he gets the core strength, the jump, the leap, it's all there. Anyway, anyone else that stood out to you?
Oh, no, we mentioned Judson Clark. He was solid. Sam Banks flashed a bit again in limited game time. And Tom Brown was fine, but I think Sonsi's very much the the one among the younger players who's caught the eye?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. Just really, and you know, he's not naturally the kind of player. Well, I do like inside mids, but he's not naturally the kind of player I like. But I just love watching him play. Mm. Anyway,
I thought Biggie Nguyen had a pretty good day in tough conditions too.
Biggie is shredded. I've got a lot of hope for him just by he looks like an AFL player, and when you see him in the contest, he looks like he's got a lot of confidence. So we'll see, but it was not the day for him. It was just too wet. It's, you know, it was the terrible day to play that's his kind of role. Anyway, Nick, we're up to 40 minutes after a bad loss, so I really do think we need to wrap this up with a Western Bulldogs analysis. So we're two-goal underdogs, according to the bookmakers. But you've got a bit of hope, you were saying before.
I don't know why. It's strangely...
They're good at centre clearances, which freaked me out.
And it's a really deep midfielder... Deep midfield with both who win their own ball, but also get it in space. So that could be pretty painful. Their defence. I mean, I've always liked Caleb Daniel, but their defence is only fine, and their forward line. The forward line still a work in progress. Like Cody Waitman. Has made himself a real pest, but kicks a few goals. Jamara Ugle-Hagan, the occasional flashes of talent are becoming more regular, which is annoying. But yeah, if we can break anywhere near even in midfield, we can win this. And maybe I'm being strangely over optimistic, but with the prospect apparently of Prestia and Jack coming back into the team, with Flossie hopefully not too far afterwards. But yeah, I don't know. How are you feeling?
No, I much prefer your analysis to mine because I just sort of
we're doomed.
sort of went through the amount of midfielders they have that would be our best inside mid and got quite depressed. But we beat them last year in a very similar circumstance.
Mm, I know, it was great.
The point about Jack is like it'll be interesting whether we go with the. If Dimmer does really, well, not Dimmer, the selection committee do sometimes really roll the dice after a big loss. So the soldo for Jack isn't entirely on the cards. Mm. Or the Jack coming back in the team and Noah going into the back line is also on the cards. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's quite a different setup this week. But I think we're on Team Sonzi for at least getting a sub Guernsey.
Yeah, very much too.
And I'd like it I'd understand if they dropped Gibkus, but I'd also love it if they
did. Look, he was fine.
I mean, he has never played a game of AFL football.
No.
And maybe you don't learn that much from that, but... You know, he's such a good kick. Like, it might benefit him to have a game where he just gets out and is able to distribute. Like, he had 8 touches for the game. He didn't have a touch in the first quarter. And that's just nature of the role and what he does. But, you know, he might benefit
him. I didn't notice him. I think I only noticed him getting outmarked a couple of times. Like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I actually like that Dimmer gave him quite a few matchups against King. He didn't protect him.
Wasn't really scared of it. Yeah.
And like in 2 years, Gibkus, I reckon, will catch up with King. But yeah, like right now he's dealing with when King's on. What is he? Top three key position player in the AFL?
Not quite, but he's pretty good. And yeah, we've said before, like there's almost no precedent for a key defender to step right into senior football and be good straight away as an 18-year-old. So, yeah, it's he's going well, but yeah, it's possible that he'd benefit from a week in the VFL.
Okay, well, let's wrap this podcast up before you talk yourself out of your optimistic take.
Oh no! Look, the great thing is, by Saturday night, yeah, I'm going to be an emotional mess again. I'm just sort of having the giving myself time to go through the emotional roller coaster. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.